Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Hey, Adam.
Hey, Ben.
It's been a little while since we've gone to war with one another.
Oh, like that, you say.
Well, Ben, like that.
We are fighting again. I got to go get those cards, though, man. I'm up in Studio B right now. Give me a sec.
We're at war.
There's been no formal declaration of war.
Maybe this trip will bring us some luck.
That nonsense is centuries behind us.
War! Go to war!
This is always how it works. You just spring war up on me while I'm unprepared.
Yeah, I use the element of surprise to get an advantage in battle, Adam.
That's what you've done here. Let's see if that is actually an effective strategy, Ben.
So my deck is still shuffled, A-F-A-I-K. Should we just go?
Yeah, let's just go.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, flip.
Oh, no. I have a sure loser, Ben. I have Tate. Ensign Tate of Decent, right? That's the one where Tate's idea of flying into the sun is questioned by both acting Captain Beverly Crusher and the guy with the weird eyebrows.
Oh, yeah. What was that guy's name?
Barnaby?
Barnaby.
Yeah. Who does Tate lose to, Ben?
This is a character named Bijik. And I think this is one of the Klingon officers they get on the FaceTime when they like try to put a call into Gowron, and they get like a functionary.
Oh, right, like one of the admin guys.
Yeah. So
it's been a long time since I've known Bijik, Ben. So thanks for the reminder.
You haven't experienced Bijik recently?
No. That's what happens, right, when you're on the road, Ben.
So is that one in my column?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Tate is a sure loser in my book.
I don't know, but Tate is real easy on the eyes.
Yeah, but not very easy on the acting, in my estimation.
I think we had difference of opinion on that.
Yeah, but, we did.
I'm not going to look a wind horse in the mouth.
This is war, Ben.
All's fair. Should we flip over another card?
Let's do it. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, Adam.
What do you got?
My my card is for medical kit. It is representative of special medical equipment. Such equipment has been developed by many races.
Oh boy. Well, you may win again, Ben, because my character card that I've drawn is named Taurus. He is a Romulan who looks like he had a fire extinguisher dropped on his head. He's got he's got one of those faces that is very tall for the size and shape of his head.
It's not Chevulin, is it?
No. No. Yeah, he's just got big face. And he's got a too short forehead. He's representative of male Romulans trained in the field of science. Specialist in the study of extra-dimensional life forms.
There's no way a science Romulan loses to medical kit.
I guess it depends on whose version of medicine you believe is best. Are you a bigger believer in Romulan medicine or Federation medicine?
Well, this is definitely a Federation kit, but I think it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
In the, you know, they could only do one extremely bad Photoshop of that for this card. So I'm gonna call it for you, buddy.
All right, I'll take it.
I know you don't love your Romulan, but it's better than medical kit. Trust me.
All right, fair enough. Let's break the tie, Ben.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
I have Repair Mission. This is one of those cards that makes it hard to play war with because it's an actual, like, thing to do versus a character.
Yeah.
Edge of Federation Space, investigate malfunction of subspace radio telescope. That's what this mission
is. I have Treaty, Romulan / Klingon.
I guess...
Yeah, like, I don't really know what that is. I feel like we need to flip another card. I feel like that's just a nothing.
What would you rather do? Like, I'm fine with flipping a fourth card, but, like, would you rather go on Repair Mission or Diplomatic Mission?
I think Repair Mission. If it's Romulan Klingon Treaty, that's no good.
Yeah, that sounds really
it's
hard.
Trouble.
All right, let's flip that fourth just to do it.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Oh, man, it's going to be hard to beat mine, Adam.
Oh?
I have QNET. Q raises an enormous force field grid in space. It's the Pendleton shirt in space.
Yeah, that one is the clear winner. I like the card that I drew, but it's not going to beat Pendleton Net. I have Tarek, one of the Lower Decks guys. He's the Tri-Hard Vulcan.
The front-zip Vulcan.
Yeah. One of his traits is not trying hard. It's just the standard integrity, cunning, and strength. I wish try hard was one of those. It's too bad.
If we ever get our hands on an edition of this game, we'll make sure to include those kinds of qualifications.
Yeah, indeed.
One of my favorite things we were given on tour was like loaded decks of these customizable card games.
Yeah. We can't play war with those decks.
No, it's just going to be Shimoda versus Shimoda. You know, like, I think they were even the same order, but they were, like, very much specific things that we've talked about on the show in a deck.
No one wins in a Shimoda versus Shimoda conflict, Ben.
No, that would be terrible.
No one except the bartender. Well, you win again, Ben. I don't know what the score is over the long term, but I feel like you've won war pretty consistently against me.
I think you've won a couple, at least one.
Yeah, I mean...
How many times have we played?
I'm looking through the cards that I've used in war, and I like a few of them, except I'm looking at Archer. Archer definitely loses. and Vecma, our Lady Klingon, whose advances were denied by one Will Riker.
Well, Adam, continuing the now 3-episode-long theme arc of parenthood, we have another episode to talk about here today. What do you say we get into it?
Yeah, I'm into that, Ben. It's Season 7, Episode 22, Bloodlines. Ben, this is the part 2 of a cliffhanger that occurred all the way back in season 1. Everyone waiting with bated breath over what would ever happen with Damon Bach.
If you thought the summer in between Best of Both Worlds parts one and two was long.
So much time had passed, they actually recast the character.
Is that a recast?
Yeah. That's not the same guy.
Oh, too bad. Yeah. Well, he brings a lot of vim and vigor to the character. We're hanging out on the bridge, and an unknown object comes out of nowhere.
It appears to be an unmanned probe.
Hails Picard by name, and in opening the communications, this thing starts like emitting some energy, and a hologram appears on the bridge, and it is Damon Bach, the guy that attempted to kill Picard as Rewenge.
What does it mean?
It means omerta.
For his dead son, who I guess this was the battle referred to in the episode entitled The Battle.
Yeah, this is the Battle of Maxia guy, right?
The USS Stargazer took out a Ferengi ship when Picard was in command.
Literally, no one has thought about this battle except for Bach.
Doesn't Picard have like the Butcher of Maxia or something as his name?
What a great title! If so, I would trade on that name all the time.
Yeah, your girlfriend sends you to the store for feminine hygiene products, and you say, "Actually, I probably shouldn't. I'm known as the Butcher of Maxia."
This is really embarrassing for Picard, I feel like. Like, his shit is being put out into the street in front of the entire crew. Like,
yeah, so what Bach has said to Picard here is that Picard is a father, and Bach is you know, admires Picard's skill in hiding his son from him, but he's going to kill Picard's boy.
Jason Vigo is as good as dead.
Picard makes no effort to sort of zup Bach into, hey, can we discuss this more in the ready room, please? Like, everyone is watching this happen. This is so embarrassing.
It really leaves Picard looking like his pants have been pulled down. He is pretty gobsmacked with this revelation.
This made me think of our time in Philadelphia, Ben, when I heard no less than two paternity conversations happening on the street, like as we walked to lunch one day. Really weird to overhear something like that.
Yeah. Like a weird argument to have while you're walking to something with somebody.
Yeah. And Riker...
Like, hey, we're going to leave school and walk to a pizza place for lunch. And on the way, we'll discuss whether or not I'm the father of your child.
I guess there's no good time and place to do that. So you're just going to do it while you do other things, right?
I guess so.
Yeah. I feel like Riker's friendship is really needed here. Like, what Riker could have and should have done if he were true to his character is, like, sidle up to Picard, like, put a knowing hand on his shoulder. I got you, bud. I know this sucks, but we'll get you through it.
Geordi, we've got to abort.
Riker is like in the ready room. Picard is like, hey, man, I know it's none of your business, but you deserve to know, since that kind of happened out in front of everybody. There is a possibility that I have a son I don't know about. And what Riker should have said is, are you kidding? I probably have 50 sons I don't know about.
If I was obligated to tell you about all of my maybe kids the way you felt obligated to talk to me about yours, like, our conversation would never end, Captain.
Captain, why do you think that there are husks all over the cargo bay?
Riker's bunch of husk children, like like so many grapes.
Yeah.
They do a nice long push into Picard here, right? Like, this is like maybe the one interesting shot in the whole ep, is they start across the ready room and they do that long slow push during something dramatic.
Picard does have an idea of who this kid's mother might be.
Mr. Data, see if there's any mention of Jason Vigo in Federation records. You might start with Miranda Vigo.
And so they use her name to try and, like, poke around and see if they can't find this guy, because a threat has been issued against his life. So the flagship of the Federation has gone to 100% save this maybe person who maybe exists life mode. And so they're flying around and they're doing like genealogy, and they track Miranda Vigo and maybe Jason down to a planet. And they're still not sure because these planets don't have good record keeping, but they determine that it's possible that the southern continent of this planet is where to look, because Miranda was always interested in farming, and that's the only part of this planet where people cultivate any plants. And I was thinking about this, Adam, like, is farmer the most eccentric job you can have in a post-replicator world?
Yeah, I really think so. It's like a corded telephone salesperson. Like, why yeah, even?
It's weird because, like, Jason, comes out later that Jason's a bit of a petty criminal and, like, has done a lot of B&Es and stuff. And it's like, why? Why do you steal stuff? There's, like, you have to be totally whacked out mentally to have that seem like a good idea, right?
The replicator is sort of the ultimate device in the universe. Like, if you're going to bother, like, terraforming a place or colonizing a planet that has already been terraformed or is ready for life, like, it seems like replicator is the natural second step. Set up the replicators.
The idea that you would ever steal something in a world where you can have anything you need or want is crazy.
Maybe that's the juice. That's Jason's juice. That it's what makes him feel alive.
The ultimate rush. There's nothing that comes close to it. Not even sex.
Well, that and climbing cliff walls inside caves.
Right.
Because they do a scan and they discover that he is, like, deep under the surface of the planet's crust doing some spelunking, and they beam him onto the transporter pad, like, mid-rock climb.
They don't do this nearly enough, the beaming of someone over who's in the middle of something else.
Yeah, I felt like it was a real missed opportunity to have Picard show up in some rocket boots and say, Jason, we're going to need you on the ship now, and then Jason fall off and Picard rocket boot down to save him.
Perhaps because it is there is not sufficient reason for climbing the mountain.
I am hardly in a position to disagree.
I especially like the minute later callback where Jason's like, you could just put me back on the rock face, and then he like articulates his body into the position that it was before, but pre-beam out.
Yeah.
That's fun.
That's a lot of trust that you remember exactly how you were, right?
This Jason, really good looking guy. He's got like ultimate 90s hair. He's
got some real 90s star power, I feel like.
Yeah. He has, his haircut is sort of a version of the haircut I've had for 20 years. Except he's got the Conan O'Brien version of it. Like it goes very high and very wide.
He's got really good volume, really good thick strands. He might be using that Pantene Pro-V, for all we know.
It may be the most 90s hair we've seen on a man on this show. It is just quintessentially 90s.
I don't know. I feel like I would put Ginger Jesus up against this guy for 90s-ness any day of the week.
He's got, like, fighter pilot looks. Like he should be piloting Airwolf or something.
Yeah, like, he's like a third row background character in Top Gun.
Yeah, but I mean, that diminishes.
Tom Cruise is like, I never want that guy to be in focus if I'm on camera.
I think that's all to say that, like, he has real and true charisma. I really liked him from the start, and I thought his work as an actor in portraying this character was super strong.
Yeah, he has sort of those rogue vibes of what is that guy? The roguish guy that came aboard and, like, really charmed the pants off of Wesley.
The outrageous O'Connor episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that, but less jokey.
He seems like he would be, like, if you weren't able to do a DNA test and you had to assign who his dad might be on the ship, he's got like Riker carriage to him. He's got that sort of confidence.
Indeed. And he also has that sort of like energy. Like Troy comes in and she's like, "Hey, I heard you just had a paternity test and found out Picard is your father, and also there's a deranged Ferengi trying to kill you. So I thought you might want to, you know, talk about that." And he's like, "Yeah, but first, what's up with you?"
Yeah, he is totally eye-fucking her from jump. And to Troy's credit, she keeps it totally professional throughout. Like, this guy is being a fucking creepo. And she's like, "Hey, well, if you want to talk in a professional manner, like, you know how to reach me."
Yeah, didn't come here for that, bub.
He's like, "I hate to see you go, but I love to watch you leave."
And she just fucking roundhouses him.
Perfect.
He does not want to remain on the ship for any length of time. He doesn't quite get the Damon Bach thing, in spite of Picard telling him that his life is in danger. He sort of wants to roll the dice and be solo about it. He's really uncomfortable with the idea of being sort of held captive for his own good. He's a free spirit.
Yeah, and like, I think that's said in a lot of ways. Like, his character is not the most vocal about his feelings, but... he stays in his climbing costume like way past when another character would probably switch into a vest and a long shirt.
Yeah, like that's a great point. Like, he stays in his clothes because he's expecting to go back soon, and then he finally gives it up for that vest combo.
I mean, let's be honest, that vest combo looks great on him.
It really gives him some Marty McFly vibes. You stick anyone in that red vest.
"Hey, kid, what'd you do, jump ship?"
So this guy is fun employed. He is an avid extreme sports bro. And really, like, the idea that his father, who he never knew anything about, would be a, like, important starship captain character like Picard is pretty much a head trip.
You know, sort of along the lines of your comment about farming being sort of like an affectation more than like a viable career choice in the 24th century. It's interesting that Jason does not show any deference at all to Picard as a space captain figure. You know, like, he's not impressed or blown away by the ship or his possible dad's job or anything.
It says a lot about him without specifically saying anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I also like the way Dr. Crusher deals with this news.
Yeah.
Like, when she tells Jason and Picard the results of the paternity test, it is like nothing could be further from an episode of Maury.
"You are the father."
When she delivers the news, she plays her tone really strangely.
She is not psyched.
"Excuse me, gentlemen. The test results are ready if you'd like to hear them."
She plays it for drama, for one thing, and that's fun. Like, she basically, in the room, goes to an in-room commercial break. "You guys are going to want to see this." 4-second pause. "I've got the results."
It's like in a reality show when they're going to pull the, you know, who's going to be kicked off the island out of the envelope or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can tell that they're just adding 45 seconds of unrealistic tension to the moment by just cutting to different reaction shots.
Yeah, they really could have done that here.
But yeah, so like there's a lot of heavy duty feelings going around, and you know, Picard is trying to connect with Jason. He's like, "Hey, man, like, I didn't even know you existed. And I think if your mom had told me, I would have made an effort to, like, be a part of your life or, you know, at least send you letters and Christmas presents or whatever."
This performance by Patrick Stewart, I find totally real feeling. It really feels like he's trying in a sincere way, but not trying in a ham and cheese way. But like, this feels like the character making an effort in a way that we haven't seen before. Like, he's really trying to make a connection. He's trying to share who he is and what his interests are with him. And
which is a really hard thing for Picard.
Yeah.
And like, the character of Jason couldn't be a harder person for him to express that to, because Jason wants nothing to do with it and wants to get as far from the situation as he can.
Yeah, he's sort of giving him the Wesley treatment.
It's a bummer, man.
Yeah, it's Picard asks what happens to Jason's mother, and the story Jason tells is pretty horrifying. Like, not only was her decision to go do farming on some distant planet, but it was to do farming in like the bad part of the planet where there's like roving street gangs robbing people for their crops.
This must be outside of Federation territory, right?
This is why you need a replicator. Replicators save lives, Ben.
It's like getting mugged and having them take you to the ATM and like making you put in your code at knife point, like going to the replicator and giving them as much tea Earl Grey hot as they could possibly consume at knife point.
Yeah. Yeah. All that goes away once you have the replicator on the planet. Doesn't make sense.
Can a replicator replicate a replicator? If so, you have as much replication as you need.
It's true. You only need one.
You just cover the planet in replicators and replace everybody else.
This starts Jason down a road of like anti-replicator. Like, he lives his life in vengeance towards replicators.
Mm-hmm. He's always throwing wooden shoes at replicators.
That may be headcanon-wise why he never accepts a drink from a replicator when Picard offers him one. This happens a couple times during the ep, and he's like, nah, I don't want anything out of that death box.
He's only a Saurian brandy man.
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence.
So here's the deal. Damon Bach has devised a way to get onto the Entrepreneur, whether or not the shields are up, and they figure out that it has something to do with a subspace transporter technology, something that the Federation attempted to invent but abandoned because it was too hard or something.
It sure seems like, especially this season, the Federation has attempted to devise some great pieces of technology and then for whatever reason just stopped. This is a great idea. Subspace transporter sounds like a killer move.
What range would that kind of transporter have?
In theory, it could operate over several light years.
You could transport a torpedo right into somebody's engineering section.
That's what
I'm
saying.
Fill it with snakes.
Yeah. You've got torpedo snakes at the ready, and your shields are useless against them.
Yeah.
Why would you give that up? You have a cloaked ship. You have fire beaming technology. You'd be unstoppable.
The Borgs are not going to be able to adapt to this.
It sounds too hard, Ben. We should probably give up the research. Let's get into farming.
Just being a society with no money, what expense would be too high for them to not want to research a technology like this?
I don't know. This is so boring.
So Picard keeps getting visited by Damon Bach. Like, he'll like wake up in the middle of the night and Bach will be leering over his bed. And it's like, it's really him. It's not a hologram. And so at one point he comes and like visits Picard in the ready room, and Geordi and Wesley are able to use the skeleton finder to determine like how he's doing it.
I love how every odd ensign on the ship will have a phaser like on their coffee table at any given point, but captain of the flagship doesn't have anything in a nightstand that he can draw on an intruder. That's great.
Yeah, but they're really worried because this means they don't really have a way of protecting Jason. Jason could be transported off the ship at any moment. And of course he won't be, because that would be not great for dramatic structure, but...
What is great for dramatic structure is Picard assigning a security detail to Jason that includes young Liza Minnelli.
And old Billy Eichner?
Yeah. I want a bottle episode just about them.
Yeah, Lieutenant young Liza Minnelli and enlisted man old Billy Eichner are like following Jason around, like they won't get off his nuts in 10 forward.
Do you think you could give me some room?
They're tailing a car by like putting their bumper right on Jason's. Like they are not giving him any room at all. Like they're like following him into a bathroom stall amount of close.
I gotta imagine that old Billy Eichner would be pretty thrilled to be hanging out with young Liza Minnelli.
Yeah.
I don't want to be like a, I don't want to like play into stereotypes, but I feel like I know enough about Billy Eichner to surmise that.
I feel like you do too, man.
It's Liza Minnelli!
No, I know. Ben,
did you feel like Jason had no sideburns continuity in this episode? It felt like they went from sharp to dull a couple of times.
I did not pay any attention to his sideburns.
I don't know. I found his sideburns distracting, both in terms of how great they looked, but also in the varying lengths.
Man, I'm going to have to keep an eye on that as I scrub through the episode.
Well, if you disprove that theory, I hope you edit that out, because I'm almost positive his sideburns changed lengths.
Weird.
Yeah.
Well, they come up with the idea that they are going to get a pattern lock on him that follows him around. They're just going to program the computer to keep a transporter lock on him. And meanwhile, he is having some health issues. Like they find him collapsed on the floor at one point, and it turns out he has like a degenerative neurological disorder.
Yeah, they teased this a little bit earlier with some hand tremors before he finally is flopping around in his quarters later.
I thought that was going to be like he's a Manchurian candidate and was really here to kill Picard on behalf of the Ferengis or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like there might have been something darker than what the truth is at play here. You ever get those weird like muscle tremors in your hand, like in maybe a single finger? Or I got one recently that was just like the corner of my lip.
Hmm. I mean, only when I'm about to do a murder at the behest of a sinister foreign power.
Right. Yeah. I guess that's when it happens for me, too.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a... It's correlation, not causation, but I feel like it's a very strong correlation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, this is all building up, and there's a very long scene where Picard joins Jason in the holodeck. Jason's doing a little rock climbing. Picard gets his attention by doing some reasonably skilled rock climbing of his own without even changing out of his work clothes.
Yeah.
And they have like a pretty heavy duty rap session. Like Picard kind of finally gets through to Jason. They talk about his mother, and Picard expresses very, very explicitly that like he really regrets the way things were between him and his father when his father passed away, and he doesn't want to repeat that. You know, he never knew that Jason existed, but he wants to make up for lost time and like be a positive influence in Jason's life. And Jason's like, "Nah, man, you don't want to hang out with me. I'm a loner, a rebel."
There's a lot of things about me you don't know anything about, Daddy. Things you wouldn't understand. Things you couldn't understand. Things you shouldn't understand.
I thought the magic trick here about Patrick Stewart's performance as Picard was that he makes the case that due to family history, he wants to correct for a way things have been traditionally.
My own father and I were estranged.
But he never paints it. he never paints Jason as a project in a way that would feel insulting. Like, if I were Jason, I wouldn't want Picard's guilt to function as a reason to have a relationship with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it never plays that way, which seems really hard, I think, if you're looking at this scene on paper. Like, don't make me your fucking family project just because you've had a hard time with your own dad. Like, why doesn't it read that way? I think it's great. I really like this scene.
Yeah, because Picard very genuinely just wants to have a relationship of some kind.
Right.
And, like, he's pretty much open to it being whatever it needs to be for Jason.
Yeah, and Jason's pretty blown away that Picard knows his rap sheet. Picard's like, yeah, I know about all the B&Es. I know about all the beers you've stolen from convenience stores. I know that your planet deserves replicator technology, but does not have any. Like, you are imperfect, but you are mine, and so I love you still, is sort of the vibe. And he seems genuinely touched by this.
It's that unconditional shit.
Yeah.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurseth the disease.
It is not long after this that Picard gets called down to Six Bay, and Beverly's like, listen, I have some important information that I will be telling you after the camera cuts away to something else.
Picard's like, Beverly, don't you think it's time that you maybe take a break from anything involving DNA sequencing?
And Riker radios down and he's like, hey guys, that dramatic fulcrum that we've been talking about where the Ferengis can beam Jason off the ship, it's happening. And so Picard runs to the transporter room because Jason got beamed out of some other part of the ship, and Geordi and his little buddy are attempting to rematerialize him on the transporter pad. But they don't quite get him, and he's like mid-transport, and Picard like comes in and tries to run up to the pad and I guess grab the cloud of information.
What happens if he hugs the beam? Like, if an arm goes into the beam and he beams away, does he lose the arm?
Does Jason rematerialize with a third arm?
Ugh.
A third old arm?
Like, is it possible that he would be impaled by pieces of Picard? This seems incredibly dangerous.
Hey, buddy, why do you have that third old arm? Oh, transporter accident 10 years ago. This old man thought he was my dad, stuck his hand right in the beam. Now I got this weird third old arm.
Pretty gross, right? Anyway, I'm a much better climber than I ever was.
Let me buy you a drink. Don't worry, I stole my own.
The arm that Picard loses in the transporter accident is the same one that ages, like, by touching that fruit bowl on the runabout. He's been trying to get rid of that arm forever.
Yeah, that arm is not as good as the other one.
Yeah. It's got five coke nails.
Picard thinks pretty quickly. He says, like, hey, you guys have jury-rigged some stuff with the subspace something-something and the transporter something-something. Can we turn it into the same type of thing Daimon Bach has been using? You know, the technology the Federation has been researched and abandoned trying to make work. Can we do that in, say, 5 minutes?
Do you remember the years of research that was put into this and then abandoned? Like, clearly 5 minutes from a discovery, from, like, a significant scientific achievement.
Because...
Why did they quit?
They get Bach on FaceTime and he's like, now I have your boy and I'm going to use this jagged knife to kill him. And it's all your fault, Picard. And they get a beat on where he is, and Picard lays in the course maximum warp, and they're like, it's going to take us 20 minutes to get there. And he says, not if we use this magical transportation technology. So presumably the amount of time it takes to implement it is substantially less than 20 minutes. And the first person they tested on is the captain of the flagship of the Federation.
cut to the flashback scene of the research being done on this technology. Like, they're in the lab. They're, like, ready to make the breakthrough, but, oh, shit, it's 5 o'clock. Quitting time, boys.
The steam whistle goes off. Next week, we're coming back, and we're on to a different research project. It's a real shame we were so close.
Oh, man. That's great.
So Picard beams onto the bridge of the Ferengi ship and very quickly explains to the lackeys that Damon Bach has assembled that Damon Bach has been stripped of his Damonhood, and this is not a ransom mission. This is a Omerta mission. And they're like, fuck! This is another Deus Ex Prophita! So they take Bach into custody and they let Jason go. And Picard explains that Bach resequenced Jason's DNA. He's not really Picard's son. And he slipped up when he introduced whatever neurological disorder Jason has.
Beverly promises that that through her resequencing, she'll be able to fix him. But holy shit, like, what are the chances that she turns him into a salamander or something? I would be terrified.
Yeah, I've heard what you do with your genetic resequencing. I'll pass. Why don't you drop me off at some starbase? I'll see if I can get in touch with Pulaski. I'll a little bit better of a track record.
I'll roll the dice with the seizures. Thank you very much. I love what Jason does here in bargaining with Bach for his life. Like, it made me think about if I were to ever to be a hostage, like, how do you negotiate for your own life here? He's like, look, man, just cover the knife with my blood and Picard will believe I'm dead. That is not a great proposition, Jason. Like, send him back my torn clothing. That will be enough. I don't know how you talk yourself out of that situation, but it seems like Jason's as good as dead. He never really seems terrified, though, right? Like, he seems with it throughout in a fun way. In a way that is, like, totally consistent with his character. He's super cool 100% of the time.
Yeah.
He's a real cool teen.
I wish I was a cool teen.
Yeah. No chance. We abandoned that research 5 minutes before seventh grade started.
What if I don't tuck my t-shirt into my underpants?
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are born.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I kind of liked it. I mean, it's not a smart episode, but it's I think that it rises to the level of fun.
I really like the intention of doing a season one callback. I'm really puzzled that this was that callback, though.
Yeah.
Like, of all the things. Like, whatever happened to Damon Bach?
Of all the comic books we've come up with over the course of doing this show, this is not the one I would have gone to print with.
Like, if Damon Bach was so significant, like, he could have been a constant touchstone throughout the series. Like, the effort every season of Bach to kill Picard or his progeny.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
I really feel like, Ben, when you storycraft the idea of Picard potentially having a son and then not being used against Picard, I think that's a great movie idea. I think we've had several great movie ideas in season 7.
Isn't that, like, kind of what the premise of Search for Spock is? Like,
well, I'm talking about it being exactly the plot of the last TNG movie.
That's true.
With the Picard clone.
But it's Picard, not a son, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, in that way it is different. But the idea of using genetics as a way to create a weakness for a main character is sort of in play here.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it gets better than how it was done here, though, is the thing. Like, I don't know why you go back to that well for a movie.
There was a shot of Bach in this episode that exposed how the Ferengi teeth work.
Oh, yeah?
Where the camera, like, when he's in Picard's office and sitting in Picard's chair, the camera gets super close, and you can actually see his people teeth behind his Ferengi teeth.
He's like a shark.
Yeah, like there's like two rows. Never seen that before.
Yeah, not a flattering angle to shoot that close and down at Bach. And the thing is, like, he has a choice. Why did he get that close to the camera? If I'm FaceTiming, I'm holding the camera a little further away than that.
Doing like my parents and being totally oblivious to where the camera is pointing.
Ben, one thing that we are certainly never oblivious about is our growing number of Priority One messages. You want to check the inbox on those?
Let's do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secure channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is of a personal nature. It's from Tony and Christy, founding members of the Remember the Hoosnock Foundation. And it is for Dylan, Mindy, and Rez. We'd boldly go with you anytime. Fuck Plevim. Goes like this. Adam and Ben, we loved the Milwaukee show, and we hope you enjoyed our tradition of cheese curd lays and excessive podcast fluid. Perhaps my horgon was showing, because after the show, it was game on. Tandem bikes, men in top hats, stolen cell phones, belligerent prostitutes, drunk Shimodas, closing a local 10 forward with fellow viewers. It was great.
You know, if we had only gotten 8/10 drunk instead of 11/10 drunk after the show, I feel like an after party would have been in the cards. Like,
yeah,
10 forward hangs sound great. I don't remember a prostitute being a part of the post-show situation we were involved in.
I think the issue with the Milwaukee show was that we were drinking bourbon drinks that were on tap at that venue. And so while at all of the other places when we would be mid-show and somebody would put a couple of drinks on our table for us, they would be light beers.
Yeah.
This place, they would be like a pint of bourbon.
I waterfalled one of my cocktails on stage, and that was when the lights began to dim for me. My mind got murdered out at that point.
Yeah. That was a great show. A lot of fun. Very loose.
Yeah, super loose. Rascals coming strong with a P1 message there. Good to see.
Do we have another P1?
We do, Ben. It is from... quote, I live alone, age 41 with a cat. Happy now? This message is for the greatest loafheads, drunk chief engineers, malfunctioning androids, and incongruous thespians. Message goes like this. A Vulcan high five to all and sundry, watching two slightly embarrassed hosts on the greatest gen trail, providing insight, in-jokes, incomprehensible references, and indignation. I ran out of ins. To a sometimes great show, while all you really want is that sweet, sweet nuck. P.S. Fuck whichever one of Raz and Plavim I hate. I forget now.
Oh, it's hard to remember.
You know what I love about that is they used every single character. I forget now does not have ending punctuation, which is great. Excellent.
Say hi to that kitty for us. I live alone.
I live alone, age 41 with a cat, happy now. Sounds like the headline to a Tinder profile that I could really get behind.
You wouldn't think it would work, but opening with hostility can actually draw some people in.
You had my curiosity, now you have my interest. Well, if you have $100 laying around that you'd like to use towards the message of your choice, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages like these are $100 and commercial messages are $200. They're a great way to get the word out about your business or cause, or about a bad thing you want to say about a pseudo friend of yours. They are one of the great ways to help the ongoing production of this podcast. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Tarmac and
Gillard at Tanagra.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give it to the crew of the Ferengi ship who feign complete shock when they discover that Daimon Bach is not rightfully a Daimon.
Like, not a good look.
The guy was in jail. Like, these guys did zero background. You know when you go in for a job interview, you're supposed to like look over the org chart of the company and like get a sense of what they do and... You know, like you impress them if you come in with questions of your own. These guys did not do that.
They gave him a ship and a crew. This guy's all cattle and no hat. Like, we don't get that 5 minutes of exposition where like he's out of jail. He's doing that post jail perp walk.
Yeah. And,
like, the cuffs are getting taken off. He gets his bag of personal items at the cage.
Yeah, that's the cold open I want, where he's doing, like, chin-ups on the top bunk in jail, like yelling Picard at the rain out in the yard.
Totally ripped Ferengi. Like, that's what I want to see. I want to see the Ferengi that just wears a vest. Just a vest and prism tats. Like, tatted up ears. He could be the Danny Trejo of Ferengi.
That would have been fun.
Hell yeah.
What if Bach has held it together so well? What if he had totally fallen apart?
That would have been great. Like, that's how you make a Ferengi threatening. like is you give him that kind of edge, that post jail edge.
Unhinged Farang.
Yeah.
Who is your drunk Shimoda, Adam?
I'm giving it to a person/body part, Ben. I wish I wrote down the time code here. I think you'll be able to include it in the show. But when Jason falls to the ground and goes through a seizure, you can see very pronounced floppy dick flopping around inside his pants as he does that.
Really? Kind of have to scrub through and find that.
I know. It is, to my head canon, actual dick flop. And I don't know how you don't stick that actor in some briefs. Yeah, right?
Liza Minnelli had her hand very close to that part of his thigh, too.
You know what I'm saying? He's got total dick flop. I do
like a nice dick flop.
I do, too, but... is that the time to go commando when you know you're going to be flopping around on the ground? Maybe it is. Maybe that guy is trying to send a message. If so, message received. And for that reason, I'm giving my Shimoda to Jason's dick. Clearly the thing having the most fun. What do we have coming up in the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is Season 7, Episode 23, Emergence. The lives of the Enterprise crew are endangered when the ship suddenly develops its own intelligence. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Ben, we're playing all the hits in Season 7. We gotta have one last episode where the ship becomes extremely dangerous and or we have holodeck fun times.
This is both.
Yeah. Two great tastes that taste great together.
Gotta go to Vertiform City, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, next step.
I don't remember many things, and I remember Vertiform City for some reason.
I remember Vertiform City being so great, though not as great as New Vertiform City.
Oh, is it New Vertiform City?
Well, no, I mean there's two different stops on the train.
Oh, jeez. Boy, you really remember this one.
Look, I remember that and the Elder Lebowski being in it. That's all I know.
Oh, yeah. Man said to take any rug in the place.
Well, that's coming up next, Ben.
Can't wait.
Coming up next for us is the part of the show where we do our end credits, Ben.
The part no one listens to, Adam.
The part where we thank Dark Materia for our theme music and interstitial music, as well as Adam Ragusea for all our extra music. Both of those
guys do a
great
job. The one where we encourage people to go to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the production of the show, and also to MaxFunStore.com to get all of our terrific merch items.
Yeah, I mean, supporting the show isn't about just supporting Greatest Gen in its form right now. It's about making sure that the show continues on, series after series after series, in perpetuity. So if you are interested in this stupid thing that we do continuing, that is a way to make sure that we keep doing it.
Indeed.
If you've got thoughts on the episode that are the good kind, you can share those on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CutForTime. Ben is there as @BenjaminR, AHR. We also have Reddit groups and Facebook groups for sharing all of the memes that are good enough to print.
And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that is hidden behind a brick and a wall.
What's the over-under on Lebowski drops for the next ep?
We just might play the audio of the film The Big Lebowski instead of have an episode.
I'm going to set the over-under at 9.5, and I think we're going to go over on that.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist-owned.
Listener-supported.